is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
You're listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. The News for the Soul Radio Network airs daily, and our archives are always totally free. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutrition, and Ayurveda. She's a scientist, professional speaker, and the author of over 20 books. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here to help you achieve complete optimum health. Please welcome Dr. Holly back to News for the Soul.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to St. Patty's Day, not March 17th. Hope you're getting a kiss and a hug for St. Patrick's Day, and hopefully you'll get some information from me today. Okay, as usual, we'll start with our gardening component. Just want to remind you, if it's 10 degrees Celsius or 50 degrees Fahrenheit in your area, it's time to start putting out your mason bees. And just, if you don't know, mason bees do 10 times the amount of pollination that honeybees do. They don't sting like the honeybees will. And they're vital to your garden, especially if you're growing vegetables and fruit trees and berries and what have you. I don't really mind if you're growing flowers, that's up to you. But that's not my focus, in case you haven't noticed. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I told you last week I was going to start going over formulas, but I thought I needed to do this part first before we go over the formulas to protect your gardening from pathogens. And what it is called a phenology. Basically what it is a way to determine what to grow when according to what's blooming and blossoming in your area. So just one sec, I got a delivery. Thank you. What we look at is what's growing and blossoming, opening up in your garden, and then that will tell you what is good to be planting at this time. Start with, and note that I've given you a number of references on the article, if you want to look up the article. But the references are basically for North America. However, I've also given you a reference for Europe, another one for India, but if you look it up, you can find one for your given area, I'm sure. Okay, so let's start. When crocuses bloom, it's time to plant chard, kale, lettuce, peas, radishes, and spinach. When daffodils bloom or lilac leaves start to open, you can plant your carrots, beets, radishes, broccoli, cabbages, etc. When your grape hyacinth or your narcissus bloom, plant cabbage and broccoli, or transplant your broccoli, direct sow broad beans, cauliflower, celery, and corn salad. I love corn salad. I never heard of it before, but since we started growing it, I love it. Type of lettuce. When forsythias bloom, you can plant onions. You can direct sow your beets, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kohlrabi, parsley, Swiss chard, and turnip. When the dandelions bloom, and I have to love, I live in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and people always complain about dandelions, which if you're into health, you understand that the dandelion root and leaf are phenomenal for your kidneys and for your liver. But you don't want to get it out of the garden where the dogs have been peeing on them. But I always thought they were natural to BC until I went to naturopathic college and found out, no, they're from the East. And someone who thought they were pretty flowers brought them out, I think it was in the 1920s, from Ontario or Quebec, and brought them out here to BC, and now we have the weed out here. But the weed, or you might see it as a medicinal plant that's beautiful for the body. Dandelion tea is a great way. Dandelion leaves are great to put in salad. Bitter, but very, very helpful for the liver. So going back to our phenology, when dandelions bloom, you can plant potatoes, chard. You can direct sow your carrots, leeks, lettuce, parsnips, and peas. When maple leaves begin to leaf out, that's when a good time to plant various perennials. When lilacs or apple trees bloom, you can plant beans, cucumbers, squash, corn, and zucchini. When lilacs, rosebuds, flowering dogwoods are in full bloom, not starting, but in full bloom, you can plant tender annual flowers and direct sow your green beans and squash. When lily of the valley blooms, you can do your tomato transplants out into the garden. When the apple blossoms fall, you can plant your pole beans, corn, cucumber, basil, and marigold. And when your iris and peonies are in full bloom, you can plant your eggplants. You set out your pepper plants. And we do a wide variety of pepper plants. Most people think of just red and green, but you all will see the yellow and orange in the grocery stores as well. But in addition to that, you can get purple, you can get white, you can get black, you can get a wide variety of them. And I will suggest get a full spectrum of them if you can. Your melon plants, which always amaze me. We had beautiful cantaloupes last year. I was surprised that we could grow them here, but we did. And just from seeds that I took out of cantaloupes that we had eaten. Tomato plants and watermelon. So follow it or didn't take notes and you want to use that kind of information. Like I said, there's all kinds of websites I've listed. Nature planting signals for vegetables, phenology, phenology garden planting, nature signs. But I've given you a variety of different ones. I've amazed this chart from, I think, five different websites that I found on it. So that's a really good way, good indicator is nature itself. Rather than following, like we always used to use until I found this a couple of years ago, West Coast Seeds has a beautiful catalog and of all the different seeds and how to grow, when to grow, where to grow, etc. But in addition to that, they have charts of when to grow. But, I mean, we know that our weather changes from year to year, especially this last few years. A lot of people will claim that our weather is being manipulated by satellites and different technologies. So you can't say, well, you know, at the end of February you should grow this, or at the beginning of March you should start planting that, what have you, because it depends on the weather. So if we watch nature itself and see how nature is responding, we have a much better idea of what to plant and when and where. Okay, so just an idea for you. If you're into your gardening, that's a great way to determine what to grow, when and where. Okay. And again, don't forget your mason bees. I think I said that at the beginning. Mason bees do not sting like your honeybees do. Make sure that if you have a little nesting box for your mason bees, they have the mason bee tubes in them. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but Tom took one of my little birdhouses, took off one side of it, and then just put in, he went and bought the tubes, put them in, and the mason bees do wonderful in there. And then all you have to do for the winter time, once they hibernate again in those tubes, then you can just take them into the garage and leave them there. They work, you know, just stay quiet over the winter. And then they start coming out again, like I say, when the temperature gets to be about 50 degrees Fahrenheit, 10 degrees Celsius, you put them outside in front of the hive that you've bought some new ones. And I buy new ones every year. And I just set them in front of the tubes. The one thing about it, they always say, at least all, what I've always read, is that keep the tubes facing east so that they get the morning sun. They do prefer that. Okay? And they shouldn't be more than 6 feet above the ground. I have no idea. I've just read that, so I'll pass that on. So I always keep mine on, actually it's about 5 feet above the ground. Is on my high raised gardens. I have raised gardens at 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, and 5 feet, depending on what's growing. Okay, so that's our gardening for today. Let's move on to, not the questions, but the article. So today we're going to talk about four different types of COVID vaccinations. What are they? How are they different? What are their pros and cons, should you or shouldn't you, et cetera. So recognize that as much as Big Pharma has come up with four different types of vaccinations, always remember COVID stands for
certification of vaccination identification, which is why so many people out there are saying that the virus was created for the vaccination, not the vaccination for the virus. Keep that in mind. But let's look at the different types and what about them. The first one is considered a whole virus vaccine. Now, some of the types we have out there are Sinopharm and Sinovac. The theory behind the whole virus vaccine is that it uses a weakened or deactivated form of the pathogen. But even in its weakened or deactivated state, it can provoke an immune response to create an protective immunity. So it's kind of similar to a homeopathic protocol. You're using a very, very small dosage to provoke the system to respond. There are two types of whole virus vaccines. There's the live or live attenuated, and that means it can still grow and replicate, but it won't cause illnesses, so they say. The inactivated vaccine does contain genetic material, but it's been destroyed either by temperature or chemical so that they cannot infect the cells and replicate. Okay, so two different types of whole viruses vaccines. Now, the live attenuated one has the benefit that it is, quote, well-established technology. Now, remember, just because it's well-established doesn't mean it's effective, doesn't mean it's useful, doesn't mean that it doesn't have harmful side effects. It's just well-established. It does have a good, strong immune response, and the immune response involves both B cells and T cells. And I think in the next part is where I get into the difference. We'll just put that on hold because I did put that in somewhere. The thing about them is they are cheap to create. Now, the detriment to the live attenuated whole virus vaccine is that they're not good for people who already have a compromised immune system. It can cause a lot of problems. It may, in fact, trigger the same disease that it is trying to prevent, and it is temperature sensitive. Now, the other type of whole virus vaccine is the inactivated kind. And the benefits, again, include well-established technology, which I say the same thing for, but it is more suitable for people with compromised immune systems. So it's gentler on the system. There's supposedly no risk of triggering the disease. It's simple to create, and it's relatively stable. The detriment is it may require booster shots. Now, most vaccines actually do require booster shots, whether it is secondary shot, whether it's in with a couple months or every 7 years or what have you. They usually do require that to keep them active. The number of doses is two doses intramuscular. Types of similar vaccines are Hep A, polio, and rabies. They've all got the inactivated type. So the whole virus vaccine uses a weakened or deactivated form of the pathogen that causes COVID-19 to trigger protective immunity. Okay, the second group is the RNA or mRNA vaccine. Now remember, with viruses, they don't typically have DNA, they have RNA. It is a new form. This is what Pfizer and Moderna is all about right now, this new form of vaccination, which some say is not a vaccination, so you can argue that. There are no other approved vaccines at this point. It is brand new, although there has been a lot of research for some time, well over a decade, I believe. Many are concerned that the mRNA could be misdiagnosed for something completely different or new in the healthcare system without realizing it. Others are saying that, yeah, it is new to the healthcare and could provoke all kinds of unknown issues for which we are not prepared. Many are arguing that it can, in fact, change your DNA. So normally in our system, our DNA produces three different types of RNA that go on to produce all kinds of compounds our body requires. When we're looking at a vaccine going from the RNA backwards, just like the PCR testing goes backwards from the RNA, it's guesswork. And with the vaccine, we have no idea all the different issues that could come up with it in terms of altering our DNA, which is why some people are calling it transhumanism too. It actually has the capacity to alter our DNA, which is very, very scary. Many are wanting to use it because it is cheap and it's readily available material. However, it has to be standardized before there's mass use of the wash soap. They've put all that on hold. It hasn't been standardized. It hasn't seen long-term effects. It hasn't got all the normal studies that normal vaccines have required. They put everything on hold by calling it emergency. So we have no idea. And as we have seen, now we're over thousands of deaths. We've got over 300,000 adverse events. It's like, holy cow, this stuff is really scary if you want to look at the data, as opposed to listen to CNN or NBC or any of your fake data news. That's my contribution. Okay. It is made up of mRNA molecules. These are made in a laboratory, and they're what's coding for the spike protein. So a virus has what's called a spike protein on it, and those spike proteins hook onto what's called TLR2 or 4. We actually have 10 types, but 2 or 4 on the cell to gain entry into the cell. So this mRNA vaccine takes the spike protein that hooks, and theory is that once it's injected into the body, once the vaccine is injected into the body, the mRNA will instruct the cells to produce antigens. Now, there are two types of substances capable of stimulating an immune response normally. There's the foreign antigens, whether that be pathogenics or we can have toxins, we can have a variety of things that are considered a foreign antigen, and self-antigens, the ones that we make ourselves. Now, they are detected normally by immune cells, and they trigger the body's killer T cells. So a killer T cell is a form of a white blood, part of your immune system. It's a white blood cell that is part of the adaptive immune response. The B cells, which also get provoked, are another type of white blood cell that is part of what's called the humoral immune response. So you get both the T cells and the B cells provoked. The T cells support the production of antibodies, so if you contact the virus in the future, the body has a better ability to fight it off. Okay, I hope that made sense to everybody. The benefits include there's no live component, so there's supposedly no risk of triggering a disease, and they are cheap to make. But since viruses are constantly changing, same from their spike protein to all their other components, are constantly changing. In fact, we've gone over this many times. Some viruses can change their RNA within 15 minutes. Some need hours, days, weeks, or months, which is why the flu vaccine from last, made according to what was going around last year, is ridiculous for this year. However, if the virus is constantly changing, how is this vaccine supposed to protect us in the future? In fact, many are saying you're going to be more susceptible than ever because of the way the process happens within your body. Now, it's also a GMO RNA. Well, we know what GMO does to our plants. Typically, they can't even last longer than 3 years. The seeds won't last longer. They won't produce after 3 years, so they have to be replenished. We know that GMO products are incredibly harmful to our body, so why would we be injecting a GMO RNA? I don't know. Okay, let's move on. The detriments include it has many or may have many unintended side effects, from miscarriages to blindness to paralysis to death. One of the places that you can go online if you want to keep up with the data is, there's many of them, but one of them is Impact. I think it's actually called vaccineimpact.com. But in addition, there's also storage issues, and perhaps the most important is the fact that it's never been tested on humans before. We don't have any history behind. We have enough crap history with regard to regular vaccines, but we have no history on this type of vaccine because it's brand new. So we have no idea of the long-lasting impact. We have no idea of the impact on our RNA, never mind our DNA and a multitude of other issues, but we have over 300,000 adverse events that have already been recognized and over 1,000 deaths. So do you want to take it? Well, that's interesting. That's a personal question. The number of doses required, again, is 2 doses and intramuscular. Now, I've put in here a quote from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, quote, the CDC, quote, researchers have been studying and working with mRNA vaccines for decades. Interest has grown in these vaccines because they can be developed in the laboratory using readily available material. This means the process can be standardized and scaled up, making vaccine development faster than traditional methods of making vaccines. Now, my whole issue with this is, yeah, but there's a big yeah, but here. It may be made faster. They may be produced quicker, but isn't it interesting that Big Pharma is protective from any lawsuits when it comes to vaccinations? So they don't have any liability. It's just a profit-making tool at our cost, my own belief system. Okay, let's go on to the third category, non-replicating viral vector. Oxford, AstraZeneca, Sputnik V, other similar ones are Ebola. Number of doses required is 2, again, intramuscular. This type of vaccine introduces a vector. That's why it's called a non-replicating viral vector. It introduces a vector which is considered, pretty big word, a safe modified version of the virus. The vector delivers a genetic code for the antigen. So in the case of the COVID vaccine, the vector is the spike proteins, or is made up of the spike proteins, found on the surface of the coronavirus that hooks into the TL2 or 4 on our cells. After the cell is infected, the cell is instructed to produce antigens that then trigger an immune response. The benefit? It is well established. And again, I've actually put it in this time, which doesn't mean it is healthy or without side effects. It just means it is well established. And it triggers both the T cells and the B cells again. The detriments are, if you've had a previous exposure to a vector vaccine, then the effectiveness of the current one is reduced. They are more complex and expensive to produce. Oh, dear. The fourth category is the protein subunit. Similar ones are hepatitis B, meningococcal, pneumococcal, and shingles. Again, you require 2 doses, and it is intramuscular. The vaccine contains purified pieces of a pathogen rather than the whole pathogen to trigger an immune response. So the theory here is that if you've only triggered the immune system with a piece of the pathogen, then the risk of it is minimized. The benefits? It is well established, and again, you know what I think about being well established, and it works for those who have a compromised immune system. The detriment is it's relatively complex and expensive to produce, oh dear, and booster shots may be required. Holy cow. Okay, so as a summary, remember, the vaccine and drug manufacturers have zero incentive to produce a safe product. Remember that. Zero incentive to produce a safe product. Why? Because there is no responsibility. There's no liability. So they don't have to worry about it. They don't have to worry about what happens to you or your family, your loved ones, etc. Because it is a declared emergency, this whole COVID since last March being declared an emergency, it not only rolls back the normal regulatory standards, but again removes them from any and all liability. It also ensures that the government will purchase their products. So it's a win-win for them, and it doesn't really matter what the cost is to us. I've given you some additional articles that you may want to read. One is an ER doctor and advanced trauma life support professor. And the title of the author is article is, I've never seen a patient sick with COVID-19. We are being deceived and manipulated. Next article, 508 dead, 297,274 reported injuries following COVID experimental vaccines reported just in the UK. Then we have the American CDC, 1,524 dead, 31,079 injured following experimental COVID mRNA vaccines. Then we have Moderna's top scientist, top scientist on mRNA technology on COVID shots. We are actually hacking the software of life, i.e. our DNA. Dr. Tenpenny, this is the biggest scam ever perpetuated on the human race. So I've given you references for all those articles. Obviously, I've given you references for the article that I wrote. And then I've given you, again, an awful lot of other articles from around the world, including articles regarding informed consent. So you may want to go to NicoleNewsForTheSoul.com, go look up Dr. Holly under art and under the archived articles. Within a couple of days, this whole article should be up if it's not up already, and you can access all of that. Of course, you also can just look it up for yourself, right? And I'm always saying to people, repeatedly, I'm giving you a basis, a starting place, if you haven't already started, to start looking at this information. Become well-informed. Determine what it is that you want to believe, what you want to work with, what sits well with you. Whether it's me or anybody else, regardless of what side of the fence any professional expert may sit on, it's your body. Do your homework and determine what you want to do in advance. Now, last week, I think I went over this on last week's session, we had a top Polish government official who had a videotaping of being vaccinated, and while he was being vaccinated, he was really putting down all the anti-vaxxers. He had connections with Bill Gates, blah, blah, blah. You could contact him if you wanted to get contacted with Bill Gates. And the next day, he was dead. Oh, dear. Then the day after that, we had the Minister of Health from, I think it was Australia, basically doing the same thing. And, you know, a video of him taking the vaccine and, you know, exposing that this was really good and what have you. And the next day, he was dead. Now, we've already said there's over 500 in the UK, over 1,000 in the US. Actually, I think it was 1,500 last time I checked. So, again, none of this is going up on your NBC or ABC, CNN, what have you, all the fake news channels. So you've got to get in the habit of doing your own research. I'm just giving you a starting place. Okay? Hopefully, that gives you some information. It gives you some ideas. If you haven't been thinking about it before, you can hopefully engage in questioning. Simply question. Have the objective perspective, critical analysis, abstract reasoning, have the basic components of intelligence to question what you're being told. I don't accept anything from either side of the fence on any medical aspect until I've done my research. Standard, and I would suggest that should be a standard for everybody. Regardless of what side of the fence you choose to embrace or engage in or what have you, make sure you have all the information. An informed response, an informed decision-making determines the amount of information that you have behind you. Okay? I'm always saying that. You know that. Okay. Now, vaccine impact. I just saw the website. It's called vaccineimpact.com. Okay. We're looking now for the questions that you sent in. So Nicole obviously doesn't send me all the questions. She just sends me some of them. And, oh my gosh, because we were kind of late on the uptake today. I started doing the vaccine. I started doing the note-taking for questions based on questions that people come and ask me. So the number one question lately, which surprise, surprise, is would you take the vaccine? And what I say to everybody is it's your own decision. It's a personal choice. And hopefully it will remain a choice. But I don't take flu vaccines. To me, the logic of taking a flu vaccine is ridiculous. They take 100 different bacteria from last year that are retroviruses, influenzas, coronaviruses, you know, pneumonias, what have you, and they try and estimate how close it will be to one for next year. Well, when we know that they're constantly changing, how are they going to make a vaccine effective for this year when it was, in fact, based on what went around last year? So, no, I don't take them. Would I take a COVID vaccine? No, definitely not. Firstly, the Robert Koch Institute, which is like the gold measure for medical research in Germany, for the world, but located in Germany, still has a 250,000, I'm not sure if it's francs or euros or what they have there, but available for anyone who can prove there is a COVID-19. So that question is still outstanding. There's also a couple other institutes, the one for 100,000, 150,000, 200,000, and Robert Koch for 250,000. For anyone that can prove there's actually a COVID-19, well, that's a holy cow. You're getting a vaccine for something that isn't even out there? I don't think so. Secondly, why would anyone expose themselves to something that hasn't already been tested effectively? All the normal, and in my mind, the protocol we have for establishing effective medicine in today's world is incredulously poor to begin with. If you start looking at the statistics, the analysis, the studies that are presented, the fact that a company may do 10 studies and only one study may show positive results, the other nine don't get published or don't get sent to the FDA. The FDA in and of itself is supported and managed by Big Pharma. I mean, so you have to be really, really careful when you're actually even looking at the standards that are normally used and how inadequate they are. For a wide variety, I've just given you a couple of reasons, but there's a wide variety of reasons. But don't even have those standards. I mean, it's just dropped off the face of the earth when it comes to regulations and standards and protocols and what have you. So, no, I wouldn't for that reason. Thirdly, there are over 300,000 reported adverse events and over 1,000 deaths already. Shoot, it's only been a couple months. You've got to be friggin' kidding. Now, not only is that high, but let's add into that a little side note. Over 8,000 medications had to be taken off the shelf between January 1st of 2013 and October 15th of 2018. I think those are the right dates. Over 8,000 medications, again, taken off the shelf because of poor research and studies to back up their effectiveness and their safety. And we don't even have that right now. We already have over 300,000 adverse events and over 1,000 deaths. So you want to take that vaccine? I don't think so. Fourthly, just knowing what it stands for, certification of vaccination identification. Wow. Like, that tells us that the virus was created for the vaccination, not the vaccination for the virus, and components of this vaccination had already been patented years before. Like, this was a plandemic, not a pandemic. So, based on those issues, those are the simple issues, the most straightforward simple issues, would I take a vaccination? Not if I didn't have to. If they imposed it, whereby I couldn't access my finances, I couldn't purchase food, I couldn't, say, travel, I couldn't access medicine, and medicine does have its place. You know, if you're having a heart attack, you don't go and see your herbalist to find out what kind of a salad you should be eating. You go to the doctor and the hospital and stop the heart attack, right? And let's just put some clarity in here. Western medicine is really good, although not the best for diagnosing, but it's really good in terms of emergency. If you've just been in a car accident, you don't go see a nutritionist. You go to the doctor, set your bones, do whatever you need to do. Right? So Western medicine is good when it comes to emergency issues. And infancy issues. They've come an awful long ways when it comes to infancy issues. But when it comes to chronic issues, they're incredibly poor. When it comes to diagnoses, we've gone over this many times, over 80% of diagnoses are incomplete or outright wrong. It goes up to 88% if it's in an emergency room. So anything that's chronic, anything that is impacting your life on a regular basis, you should be going to see a health practitioner, an MD physician, unless you enjoy taking synthetic pills that manage symptoms, cause more problems without solving the underlying issue. Right? Okay. So I have a very strong filtering mechanism. I have a very strong bias. I'm very open to recognizing that I do have that. But I want everybody, again, like I'm always saying, you need to engage in your own research. Take whatever I've given you or whatever anybody else has given you. Go and determine whether that sits right for you or not. We're all different. We're all unique. And there's sometimes that pharmaceuticals are actually a benefit to the body. But if you're talking about chronic issues, go find out what's causing them and eliminate them. I could go on and on and on. I get really passionate about this in case you hadn't noticed. But at the same time, I want you to do your own research. I keep coming back to that. Okay, let's move on. Nancy in California. I'm curious about holistic alternatives for antidepressants and antipsychotic drugs in particular. Well, that's a huge question, Nancy. If you want a good answer, then go to my book, Pressure and the Real Cause May Be in Your Body. I think I've identified, I wrote that book like 10 years ago. Good 10 years ago, maybe more. While I was still a psychologist, I just always had issues with psychology. I just thought psychology was immensely limited. They weren't looking at the factors. In fact, I kept getting in trouble because I would send people off to a naturopath or a nutritionist or for hydrocolonic or what have you, and was told that, well, that's non-evidence-based medicine. You can't be doing that. Well, I had 100% success rate when I did, and that's why I started going into all the alternative medicines because they were a lot more effective. So depression, there's so many causes for depression. You can have psychological issues to how you interpret, respond, and organize, how you perceive, interpret, organize, and respond to the world. That may come out of your childhood. It may come out because of a toxic relationship or a series of toxic relationships or a series of adverse events in your life. Could be from low magnesium. It could be from metal toxicity. It could be from the probiotics in your gut. It could be from compromised liver, compromised adrenal system. It could be from so many different issues. Hey, shoot. Bach flower remedy may solve it. Just some magnesium may solve it. So there's all kinds of holistic issues, treatments that can solve depression depending on what's causing it. Now, when you're dealing with the antipsychotic drugs, that's a different ballgame because that's an antidepressant with some antipsychotics in it, and they call it an anti-anxiety pill. Well, if you look at the adrenal glands that produce your norepinephrine and epinephrine, which are two neurotransmitters, epinephrine and norepinephrine. And if you don't, if your adrenals are either hyper and can't afford to produce them, or if they've gone into fatigue and simply can't produce them, then you can have anxiety issues. And they'll give you antipsychotics for that. Now, other things that can cause psychotic issues, again, neural toxicity, neural infections, toxicity, heavy metal toxicity in the gut, an imbalance in the microbiota in your gut, all those types of, and a huge number of others, can be causing issues in how we perceive the world. So as much as there are some really simple suggestions, more the question is, what causing the issue? Don't just assume it's how you're interpreting and responding to the world, because the question may more be about why do you interpret and respond to the world that way, and it may not be your childhood or your relationship. It may be something very physical, and you need to look at that. Okay? So I haven't really given you any solutions, but rather a wide variety of issues that you can look at that supposedly will help clarify what you need to do to resolve the issue. And again, you guys must get, if you've been listening to me for any length of time, get really bored with me saying, but it's what causes that we need to look at. It's the underlying cause. It always is, right? You can have one profile of symptoms and 50 different causes for it. So figure out what the cause is. Okay, Luann in Australia. Down under. Hi, Dr. Holly. I'm feeling strange lately, just kind of tired and unhappy. How do we find out what supplements we need and what we are lacking? Well, if you were nearby, I'd be putting you on my unit, which can assess thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of issues in the body and determine specifically what it is. But what could it be? Like I just said in the question, it could be such a wide variety of things. Are you stressed because of what's going on? Are you being isolated because of the COVID distancing issue? Are you wearing a mask all day? That is a major cause of today's world. You're not getting enough oxygen to the brain. You're not getting carbon dioxide out because you're wearing those silly masks. Those masks are detrimental. Not only that, but they increase the pathogenic load on your lungs. You breathe it breathe it out like your body's supposed to do into the mask, and then end up breathing it right back in again. And this is, I'm going to take a step further with these silly masks. Normally for an adult, your brain requires about 20% of your body's oxygen. How much of that's being blocked for an adult by wearing the mask? Well, during some stretches of time for children, they can use up to 30 to 40% of the oxygen in their brain because their brain is going through, just like you can have a sprout period in terms of height, your body getting taller and taller very quickly. You can have a sprouting, if you want, in the brain where your brain's doing a massive amount of development and needs all that oxygen. But the child's not getting it because they're wearing one of those friggin' masks. Take the masks off and breathe the real air. Unfortunately, if you're in a very polluted area, that's not such a good idea either. But we need oxygen. Now, again, taking this even a step further, our total amount of oxygen in the atmosphere is depleted. If you look at the last 40 years, we've gone down a significant amount in the available oxygen in the atmosphere because of all the pollution and because our trees are getting cut down. So wherever you are, you're probably getting less oxygen than normal, and then you go and put on a mask which cuts off your oxygen. Can you imagine what that's doing to our poor body, to our minds? And then you wonder why so many people are depressed, and it's like, well, yeah, this all fits together, makes sense. So what else could it be? Well, again, it could be the probiotics, prebiotics in your gut, the microbiota. It could be vitamin D. It could be a metal toxicity. Again, there is a wide number of issues it could be. So you need to get an assessment. Now, again, I would suggest going to a health professional, not someone who wants to manage your symptoms with drugs. Remember, let's go off on another tangent. I got lots of tangents today. 99% of your pharmaceuticals deplete the body of nutrients. If the body's already or the mind is already compromised, why would you take something synthetic to simply manage the symptoms when it depletes your body of nutrients? That just doesn't make any sense. Now, in addition to that, fluctuates 42 to 48% of the 250 most commonly prescribed drugs actually cause cancer. Why would you want that? Right? Number one cause of mitochondria. Remember, your mitochondria are all those little guys in a cell that produce fuel. And if basic cell, you may have between 50 and 500 mitochondria. In a heart cell or a brain cell, you may have upwards of 10,000 mitochondria to produce enough fuel. And the number one cause of mitochondrial dysfunction is pharmaceutical drugs. So we don't want to take them. They in and of themselves, even antidepressants can make you depressed and suicidal, for crying out loud. So, again, we don't want to, drugs can cause the problems, and they don't typically solve problems. They just manage symptoms. We know that. So, you want to go to a health practitioner who can help identify, is it a nutrient deficiency? Is it toxicity? Is it mitochondrial dysfunction? Do you have enough nutrient to have methylation cycles in your cells? How's the mucosal lining transporting nutrients in your gut? Those are the things you want to look at. Those are the underlying issues. And I even go further. I look at all your glutathione levels. We go really deep. So you want someone that can go to that level, help you identify what's causing the problem so that you can solve it. Okay? There's just so many it could be. But to go in and simply take an antidepressant, that's not going to solve the problem. Even if they do work apparently for about 18% of the population, what are they doing to your gut is number one. Remember, the first three classes of antidepressants are based on a theory, on a hypothesis, that depression is caused by low serotonin. But 98% of your serotonin is in your gut, produced in your gut, and it's too big to cross the blood-brain barrier. So when you're taking the antidepressants, what are you doing to your gut? Good question. Okay, so what do you do when you find out what's causing you to be tired and unhappy? Go to a health professional to get a good assessment. You could also read my book, either Adrenal Fatigue. You could read Depression, the Real Cause May Be in Your Body. You could read the book on your liver. You could read on the book on your immune system and try and do some self-discovery to see what's going on for you as well. Or you could just go to a health professional. And when I say a health professional, I'm someone who's really good as a doctor of natural medicine, as a nutritionist, as a herbalist, as a traditional Chinese medicine, as an Ayurvedic medicine, somebody who's good in one of the alternative fields that will actually look at your whole body and try and figure out the underlying cause. Okay, let's move on to Helene in the UK. My mom seems to be slipping away, sleeping most of the days and nothing really engages her. How do we find out if it's a physical issue or an emotional or mental one? Well, I'm sorry to hear that for you, but for your mom, it may be that she's getting ready to cross over. Typically, when people are in the last stretch of life, they do tend to sleep a lot more. Not only that, it's another component is it takes them longer to heal anything that's going on in the system, and we do more healing when we're asleep than when we're awake. So that could be what's going on. But it could also be an emotional issue that she's had enough. She feels like she's had a full life and she's getting ready to cross over. It could also be that she has a layer of, say, underlying depression about her life or what's going on currently, especially if she, a lot of her friends and family have been crossing over. And she may need a Bach flower remedy that might help solve that issue. You may want to take her into a physician and just have a general physical to see if there is any underlying physical issues. Bach flower remedies tend to work very quickly. So in the short term, you might want to just try a Bach flower remedy. I find them excellent. I've had people that were incredibly suicidal, put them on a Bach flower remedy combination for their issues and phone me up in a couple of days and go, holy cow, what's in that stuff? I got all the same issues, but I'm not suicidal. They can be really good for energy. They can be just so good for all kinds of really interesting but heavy-duty emotional issues. So that might help you, just giving that a try. And if that doesn't work, then by all means, go and get a physical to see if there's something physically underlying what's going on that needs to be resolved, or is she just getting ready to pass on? For me, I know for a lot of people, death and dying is a huge issue. It's a major loss and a lot of grieving. And for me, it's not the way it is for most people. Yes, there is grieving in the sense I've got a loss, but I'm always so happy. Like when Tom crossed over, it was a real shock to the system. But there was also real understanding and compassion that came along with it. And you obviously needed to go. It was time to go for whatever combination of reasons. And when someone does cross over, keep the doors open that they might connect with you. I know when Tom initially crossed over and I was getting all these connections, before I started hearing about the fact that everybody else was connecting with him, I was getting kind of nervous and worried. So I started looking up statistics 4 years ago now. And so I don't know if the stats have changed in that short period of time, but over 68% of those surveyed in North America had connection with people who had crossed over. So it's a lot more common than we're led to believe. Keep the doors open. But on the other hand, it may be something entirely different and have nothing to do with that. So just be open and receptive. Try Bach flower remedy and get a physical assessment. And let's go on from there. Okay. Heart goes out to you. I know it can be a challenging time for people. Okay. I'll give you a quick story. My grandmother, this is a bizarre, for me it was very, very bizarre. She was 99 at the time, and I woke up one night in the middle of the night. She's poking my arm. Holly, Holly, are you awake? Holly, are you awake? I woke up. What are you doing? Except my grandmother lived 3.5 hours away from me. What was she doing sitting on the side of my bed? Well, going on. So I'm thinking initially, okay, I'm having a dream. This is a weird dream. I get up. I go to the bathroom. I'm looking at the clock. Go back to bed. She's still sitting there. Okay. What are you doing here? She said, I need to talk to you. Okay. So we actually got up and we went into the living room. I made me a cup of tea. She didn't seem to have a solid physical form. She definitely had a form that I could see, but not a solid one. So I didn't make her a cup of tea. And we sat down. She started asking me about life after death and all these different questions and who would be waiting for her on the other side and all this stuff. And we talked for about an hour. And then halfway in a sentence, she disappeared. I was like, okay. So am I still dreaming or what? So I put things in really weird places. I put a shoe in the refrigerator, and I put my tea on the mantle and did some different things. So I'd know in the morning, was this actually real or was it just a dream? Well, everything was where I put it in the morning. Okay, so I phone up my dad and say he lives a couple blocks away from the home they have my grandmother in, which thankfully she loved, so that was good. I phone up Dad and ask, is Nana still with us? Why would you ask that? So I told him what had happened the night before. I have no idea. Everything that I put in weird places was there in the morning. He said, okay, well, he said, I haven't got a phone call, but we'll go up and see what's going on. Well, not only was she still with us, but she was with us for almost a year after that, before she crossed over. So is that because she was taking a long time to get ready to cross over? She had all kinds of connections that she would tell my dad about, visits from her husband, who obviously had gone over, and her kids that had gone over, and she was having all kinds of connections, and then this weird experience that I have. So my point being, if people can go through all kinds of weird stuff before they're actually ready to cross over. And it may be that even though your mom is sleeping most of the days and in essence getting ready to cross over, that doesn't mean it's going to happen in the near future. It could happen a year or so down the road. So who knows? You know, we don't play God. We don't pretend to play God. We just have to sit back and be patient and love them all the way. So again, we try a box flower remedy. And if that doesn't work in a few days, then get a physical assessment. That's the best I can offer you. Okay, let's go to the next question. It's Owen in Phoenix. I have been having trouble with an upset stomach issues and diarrhea, although my eating has not changed. Is it possible it's emotions or a bug, or what can I do if there's something more serious wrong? Well, even though your diet hasn't changed, it can be something that has been progressing for a long period of time and you're suddenly seeing the symptoms. Right, but it's been building up for a period of time. It could have to do with any kind of environmental toxicity, heavy metal toxicity. It could have to do with a breakdown in the mucosal membrane and you're getting things like leaky gut syndrome. It could be due to you don't have enough probiotic, you've got too much probiotic, or you have an imbalance in the microbiota in your gut. It could be stress and anxiety to do with this COVID nonsense that we're going through. It could be that your back is out. It could be that it's due to the medications that you're taking. There's an accumulation. It could be an infection. So again, go to your health practitioner, determine the underlying cause so that you can focus on eliminating the cause rather than managing the symptoms. That sounds simple, but sometimes it can be complicated and you have to take the effort to identify the underlying cause. In the meantime, you could take things like carminatives. Chamomile, German chamomile tea can be a carminative. Dill can be a carminative. There's all kinds of things that you can find in your kitchen that might settle it down, but not necessarily eliminate the underlying cause. So you always want to identify what is causing the problem, not just managing the symptoms. Okay? On that note, it is 12:55, so I'll be getting a text shortly from Nicole that we're almost at the hour. So we'll just say I have Dr. Holly with Choices Unlimited for health and wellness. My website is choicesunlimited.ca. If you want any of the books, you can't download them through the website, but you can download them through Amazon, all those other protocols. They're really cheap to download, or you can purchase them in a hardcover. That's still my way of going through books. I much prefer a hardcover. Too old-fashioned. I apologize. I still don't have them in auditory. Eventually, they might get there. In the meantime, there's lots of videos. There's YouTube videos. I think there's like 41 or 2 minute YouTube videos on a variety of different things. There's lots of information there. There's over 900 articles on the website. As many of you know, I've stopped using Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all those things, and YouTube actually, for the last couple of years because there's so many international lawsuits against them for so many reasons, and I just don't want to support them in any way. So I don't use those outlets, but there is still a ton of information that you can access. So please do take advantage of it. Have a great week. Choose to wake up every day and choose to make it a good day. And hopefully make some really good, wise decisions about gardening, as if I don't push that enough. Get your mason bees going, and we'll talk with you next week. In the meantime, have a really great week. Take good care. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.